you.
A pleasure.
From everyone, I think. It's incredibly inspiring and extraordinary work that you do. I was curious to know, how is it that you... Is it just the investment banking project that makes the money for the project?
Oh, thank you for asking me that question. I get in so much trouble from my team, one of my wonderful team here today, for not explaining this well enough. So we put $40 million to work for people in poverty, and about $11 million has come out of our businesses, and the rest has come from astonishing people who've stood beside us. So we use the businesses to fund all the core support, the admin, the research, the emergency projects, but we love it when people want to help us. And I keep forgetting to say that, so thank you for asking me that question.
So is that a call?
Yes, that's a call to action. I think you may get an email from me saying, you know, if you want to be involved in the Adara story, here's five different ways, and one of them is a lovely button that says donate now. So thank you.
Very good.
For that question.
So how much of it comes from the investment banking project?
It's about 30% that comes out of the investment banking business. I mean, I have a huge focus on making the investment bankers make us more money. So they're all saying to me, $3 million in 18 months, or that's pretty good. And I'm saying, no, it's got to be five a year. We touch 50,000 lives directly with about $3.5 million. If they make $5 million a year, year on year, that is going to be of an order of magnitude. I would guess 500,000 lives, although I know Rosie will scream for me to give that data without being able to verify it, and many, many more through knowledge sharing. So, but it's about 30%. Every single cent that we can make in the business, we're putting across the hall. I'm a volunteer to the business. The panel members are a volunteer to the business. I've got teams of amazing pro bono people, including our general counsel, so we keep our costs very lean. But I do get up every day and wish that I was like Bill Gates and I could make the business make more money. Mm. But, you know, it's a model that I think has great potential to grow over time. And one of the reasons that I think it's going to be okay is because now the big guys in town who laughed at me when I came to them with the idea are ringing me up and saying, can I be on your panel?
And how do you get work?
So I've been a sort of one-woman roadshow for the last 18 months, the performing panda. The panel members, the deal I've done with panel members is that they do not have to market. Obviously, it was quite controversial that I've got active investors. So I've just added Christian Johnson, who's the head of investment banking for Goldman's, and Tim Burrows, who's just stepped out as chair of Goldman's. They are, and they had permission to do this as long as they don't market. So it falls on the Adara team to do the marketing and really just getting the message out. We've completed multiple mandates. Our clients have been wonderful in telling people about what we're doing, but it's really about now trying to raise awareness about what we're doing and that we are a Wise Counsel senior advice house that can bring the smartest people in Australia to a client offering. And, you know, really it's just going to be a continual process, I think, of telling the story.
So you're a direct competitor with the investment banks?
We try very hard not to be seen as a direct competitor with the investment banks. Our offering is slightly different, and I've framed this with the investment banking community as something that complements our industry and that is good for our industry. We are offering very senior advice. Instead of the god floating into the room at the opening of the deal and at the closing dinner and 25,000 Johnnies, and they always are Johnnies, doing the work underneath.
They're not Jennies.
They're not Jennies. We've got lots of Jennies in Adara. It's this way for us. A very small, tight core team, very, very senior people, and the mandates we're taking so far have been complex commercial problem solving, senior advice at critical points in a transaction. So not, I'm going to come in and give you a book this thick that tells you, you know, you should sell your company and I'm going to make some money on the way through. So it's a slightly different offering, and I'm very concerned to make sure that we're not seen as competing with the Green Hills, the Flagstaffs. I do have the chair of Green Hills on the panel, but, you know, the independents, I'm very keen that it be seen as a very different and senior offering.
And do you charge the same as
we charge
the commercial?
Out the front, full freight. So we know what assets we have. You know, the first deal, David Gonski and Matthew Grounds, the panel members helped me price. And when I asked them, OK, what should we charge, David Gonski said, oh, debt. Richard Goyd is such a nice man. Let's just tell him no fee, but he can pay us what value he thinks we've delivered. And I laughed and said, I cannot run a cash flow on that basis, David. And I said to Matthew, what should we charge? And he went, oh, $1 million. I went, right, that's the difference between the two of them. And I said, I'll meet you halfway, boys, $500,000. And so deal by deal, we're figuring it out. We're only 18 months in.
God, these guys are having conniptions. They're going, what? That was how you established the price?
Yeah, there was no data analytics involved in that decision. But yeah, so, but it's not a discount offering. They are serious assets and they bring serious intent to the work. They have signed up and are responsible of co-leading a minimum of one mandate a year for a minimum of 2 years for Adara. And it's a serious responsibility and they're bringing intent to that. So they are dropping everything and doing the work for us when they're appointed on a mandate. So we're not charging them for cheap. But the only people in the end, we're the most, I think, independent advisors in Australia, because almost everybody working is not working for financial return. And other than brilliant client advice, the only beneficiaries are women and children in extreme poverty. And so, you know, that's kind of a cool outcome. So I think we're going to be all right. We're not there yet. I'm impatient at the moment.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain you're not competing with investment bankers.
With that piece, yes, exactly.
Now, let me remind you that if you've got a question, you can go to one of the microphones. We have one there, one in the middle, and one over there. Or you can SMS your question to 0417987179. I'm never short of questions, so don't worry, I'll keep going. Do you think Australians are generous?
Yes, I do. I don't get on the bandwagon of... I don't believe in should as a word. I think we should take the word should out of the English language. I think everybody has greatness in them and generosity in them. And the most generous people that I deal with are often people who have the least to give. I think everybody's doing their own thing in their own corner, from, you know, the lady that stands there with the lollipop, and, you know, or the guys coaching the soccer, or the Australians giving money in the tsunami. I think that the trick is not lecturing people, it's modelling what can be done. And I think in relation to international development, people feel a real wish that they knew how to help, but it's such a huge problem. I get a lot of people saying to me, oh, it's too big, I don't know where to start. So what I'm always saying to people is just do something. It doesn't matter if you do it here. It doesn't matter if it's the mentally ill or working in Indigenous affairs, helping the little old lady across the street. It doesn't matter. Just do something, because it will uplift you.
When you say do something, you're not talking about putting your hand in your pocket and giving $10.
If you can give $10, give $10. If you can stop and buy The Big Issue, one of the great social businesses of all time, don't just pay that wonderful homeless person $5. Give them $10. If you can. But everybody just... My message really is not you should do anything. It's just, you know, you will be uplifted if you do something. You know, community, your sense of community really makes a difference in the way you think about your life.
My next question is about our foreign aid budget.
Oh, gee. Yeah, which we just cut by another $300 million.
Mm. And the fact is that once upon a time we committed to the global, the Millennium Development Goal, which said that 0.7% of our gross national income would be allocated to foreign aid, and we are now heading to 0.2% of 1%. Because it's just a bit like whacking a tax on the banks. It's just easy to pull money out of the foreign aid budget when we feel like we need to plug a hole in our own budget. And interestingly enough, during the financial crisis, the banking crisis in the UK, David Cameron made a commitment that he was never going to resile from the 0.7, even though their banks were collapsing. And
it's amazing, isn't it? It comes back to that paradox I talked about in the start of walls going up at the same time as walls coming down. You know, we are living in a profoundly fractured world. 850 million of our brothers and sisters are living in extreme poverty. We're seeing endemic disease coming from that. We're seeing conflict, you know it firsthand. We're seeing incredible upheaval because of inequity. You know, 62 wealthiest people in the world own the combined wealth of the bottom 3.6 billion. And so
say that again.
The 62 wealthiest people in the planet have
62
have, and the eight top of them are guys, have the combined wealth of 3.6 billion. And so we're living in a world of real fracture and disparity. It's coming into our lives on a daily basis, whether it be by disease, by conflict, by terrorism, whatever, however we want to frame it. So the walls are really down in our global world, but the walls are really up in terms of us wanting to help. It seems to me to be an insane economic solution to a global economy to shut down support to our most the poorest communities in the world. We actually have a development philosophy that we will never take money from a government and we will never give money to a government, and have built Dara that way because of the politicisation of aid. And I never want to be subject to that whim. But it does not make sense. It doesn't make sense from an economic perspective. It does not make sense from a values perspective. And it breaks my heart.
How do you explain then, if we're such a generous nation, that seemingly politicians find it so easy to rob the foreign aid budget?
We need a bottle of wine to discuss that.
Okay.
I think that, the separation from the reality of what ordinary people think is fair and okay, and the way that politicians operate globally, the political elite, is profound. And I think we're going to transition into a new way of thinking about democracy because that separation is so profound. I believe that most Australians would think that it's a pretty good thing to give 0.05% to international aid, and that they think it's a terrible thing that just because you're born a woman in Uganda, you've got a 1 in 44 chance of dying in childbirth, but if you're born here as a woman, you've got a 1 in 9,000. Right, thank you, Rosie. So, I think most Australians think that's terrible. Mm. But I think there's a gap between who our political masters are serving and the way that ordinary people, decent ordinary Aussies, think.
It's interesting, actually, because there's been many investigative reports about the very thing you talked about in terms of giving money to foreign governments.
Yep.
Especially throughout Asia, throughout Africa, there was a time where it dawned on many Western governments that they were giving foreign aid to these governments whose leaders were then driving, vintage Rolls Royces, of which only three were made in the world, and that sort of incredible largesse at the top of a tree of immense poverty.
Yeah.
When you go into these countries' remote communities, mm-hmm. don't you sometimes have to go in with the imprimatur of the government?
We have very collaborative relationships with the governments in the countries that we work in.
And aren't some of those countries incredibly corrupt? And
But because when rule of law is broken, when you're dealing with extreme poverty, corruption becomes relatively endemic. So if you want to do work, with people who are on the bottom of their development ladder, that's where you are led. In terms of the actual experience of dealing with governments, if you're not a funder of governments but you're a partner of governments, so for instance, we'll build a school, it often will be the government that will build the school. We may pay for some of the bricks and mortar, they may pay for some of the teachers, we'll pay for others, the community will deed the land. Truly public-private partnerships, we have very good experiences. We've been working there in these communities for 20 years. The other thing I'll say is, the concept that corruption ends at the border of a developing world country before you get into a developed country is profoundly wrong. And you only had to read the newspapers yesterday to understand how deep corruption goes in every society. When you are dealing with poverty, the impetus for corruption is obviously higher. People want to feed their kids. They want to drive their fancy Rolls Royces. But, they are not alone in dealing with it. For us, it's all about great leaders. Before I started the business, I had a year between Nepal and Uganda, found two amazing community leaders, one in each community. They're still with me. And they've led all our work. All our staff are locals. We bring the diligence, governance and thoughtfulness to our development work that we bring to our corporate finance lives. And as long as you do that, pretty much you're going to be okay.
You don't have governments asking you for facilitation payments?
In the early days, we cross those bridges. Once you are, well, it comes back to never take, don't take no for an answer. Standing firm in the early days. We had two particularly bad incidents around that, and they cost lives for us. We had a medical shipment that was held up by somebody asking, saying, you know, here's my personal bank account detail. And we had that conversation in Adara of, oh my God, if we don't get that equipment up to the NICU, this many babies are going to die in the next 6 months. But we realised, you know, you absolutely have to draw your line in the sand somewhere, and we did. And got that person sacked, accelerated all the way up the chain, and we've never been asked since. Nepal, same thing, the Maoists. When they took over our region, and I think they never met anything quite like me, this sort of big blonde woman saying, no, no, I'm not going to give you money for your disgusting guns. You're Maoist, you're supposed to be serving the poor. Shame on you, shame on you. And they kicked us off site project for probably 9 months, but when we were let back on, never again. So it's all about figuring out what your lines are. For me, the idea that I might wake up and find that I've been involved in a corrupt organisation or they've actually done harm is so terrifying, and I think everybody at Adara feels the same way. So draw the line and hold it is the message with corruption.
And before we wrap this session, can I get everyone to get a pen out, and can you tell them how they donate?
That's so wonderful. Thank you. I think there's
I'm doing this on behalf of you.
Rosie. I've got my wonderful partnerships manager, Rosie, with me. Is there some app, Rosie? Do you want to... I think on your app... conference organisers, there's something there. But if you want to find out, go to adaragroup.org, and there's how to donate there or how to get involved. Adarapartners.org is our business. If you have a burning need to have the smartest people in Australia solve a problem for you, I know actuaries are pretty damn smart themselves, but in terms of corporate advice, we're adarapartners.org. Thank you for asking that second time.
You're welcome.
Thanks
Stay there. I want it just on behalf of the summit and all that talk of wine.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you. Thanks
everybody.
Very much. Thank you.
Stay for a minute while I just...